Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and joining me as always is Steve. How are you doing?
John, I'm Will. How are you?
Good. Any updates in the world of FinTech lately?
There's a neobank in Brazil called Neon Pagamentos. They just raised $300 million in a Series C, which seems like a massive round, especially for a company based in Brazil, and especially for what's essentially a neobank.
Yeah, $300 million. I mean, are we getting used to these large rounds that they have to be at least $100 million these days?
It seems like that's where we're going. We're going either either massive, gigantic rounds or very small seed investments, and not a whole lot in the A and B space.
So they're expanding their online banking across the country. They've been relatively small so far, but they're gonna. It looks like expand substantially and in a great market. Brazil has been having a lot of developments. The central bank just approved WhatsApp for payments.
Awesome.
And even though their economy, like everybody else, is going down this year, it is expected to slingshot back up, hopefully next year or whenever this coronavirus calms down.
True. Yeah. It's interesting because they're looking, I think their play is to basically become the neobank for the global south, what used to be called the third world. But I think that their play is to essentially, again, keep growing in Brazil. They have something like almost 10 million customers in Brazil, but then they're looking to expand throughout Latin America and maybe other parts of the world as well. So kind of the opposite of what you see with N26 in Germany expanding to the EU and then to the US, and with Revolut as well and the UK coming to the US. Now this is more of the global south play.
Yeah, that's been a play for some countries that focus first on smaller markets and then kind of build up from there. I remember Korea kind of building up and selling a lot of cars and products all over the world before building up to the US and Europe and Japan and other countries. So yeah, good luck to them.
Yeah, I think the only issue, I guess, is, you know, how do you find the right bank for you?
Yes. So that brings us to our special guest for this week, Mick Moll, the founder of Bankapply, joining us from Estonia. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, what's up?
So first of all, before we get into Bankapply, how are things going in Estonia with COVID-19 lockdowns and such? Hopefully better than here.
Yes, I would say so. We don't have lockdowns at the moment. But some numbers are going up again, so we'll see what happens, especially due to the fact that Estonia has a horrible weather. And it's, well, when the summer ends, then it really ends, right? And things go from mediocre to worse, or mediocre to very bad. So people get sick, and I guess we'll see a lot more cases. But again, not many people are in the hospital, so... yeah, it's fine at the moment, but I'm not sure how fine it will be in the next months and in the winter time.
Hopefully it stays under relative control for a while. Yeah, good luck to you guys over there. Well, go ahead and tell us, what is Bankapply and what do you guys do?
Essentially, Bankapply helps people to find suitable banks, meaning we have built a matching engine that simplifies account opening for the end users by matching their profile with suitable banks and fintechs, and also reduces the costs for the banks and fintechs to onboard a client because it has gotten very expensive. So that's what we do. We take some input from the client, and the matching engine compares that information with the information we have collected from the banks and fintechs, and compares them and then matches the profiles. The matching engine itself is pretty basic at the moment, but together with the information and data we collect, we are improving the algorithm all the time. But essentially, this is what it is today as an MEP.
And you're kind of a COVID baby. You guys just started this year. Interesting time. Mm. So how has that affected things with fundraising or operations, hiring, that sort of thing?
It's difficult to tell how it has affected because we haven't really tried to raise any money. We've been kind of working to find a product market fit and get, you know, the traction where we are satisfied. We do have users, we have revenue, but it's not the place where we feel that it's right time to raise capital. For the hiring part, it's all founders or kind of a team that are that have some equity. So we haven't hired anyone in that sense, but we have now 7 people, and it's pretty remote team. We have one person in Luxembourg, one person in Moscow, Russia, one person in Dublin, in Ireland, and yeah, rest of the team is residing in Estonia. But it's really hard to tell how it has affected us. Yeah, it's difficult to tell. I can't compare.
Until the scaling happens. Yeah, I love on your website that you're all superheroes. Mick is Thor, by the way. So it's enjoy your movies.
Yeah.
So what is the customer? So I understand that the concept here is that you help essentially customers navigate the financial system and find the right bank for them. How are you addressing this pain point, and how did you come to the idea of producing this product?
Yeah, I don't know if that sort of problem exists in the US. I guess it doesn't. But a couple of years ago, because I've been in consultancy business, we have accountants, we have lawyers, we have been helping companies or entrepreneurs to start businesses, right? And one of the things they need is a bank account. Without the bank account, the company itself has very little to no value, right? So, and then a couple of years ago, like around 2018 or so, it became really difficult for companies to open bank accounts. And it's because of the money laundering issues, right, that surfaced from Estonia as well. It got pretty wide coverage in the US as well, I believe, the Danske Bank scandal. So that was one of the kind of accelerator, I wouldn't say accelerators, but it was one of the reasons why the AML rules have been made so strict. So banks, they just don't want to take the risk of onboarding a client that isn't, you know, a very, very low risk or no risk at all. So the default setting for banks is no. And as a client, you have to prove that this no should be a yes. So that's the situation where you approach a bank. So it became so difficult that we started to figure out how we can make it better. Because on the one side, you have a demand and you actually have supply as well, meaning there are a lot of fintechs that are willing to onboard these clients, but people can't really find them. Or even if they find them, it's kind of, you know, you might need to apply for 5 different banks or fintechs before you get the positive reply from the bank or fintech. So you end up spending a lot of time and effort to get that account open. So that was essentially the reason why we started.
There's a service here in the US called Credit Karma, where basically you can get, you can go through several offers for things like, you know, a mortgage or a credit card or even a bank account, right? But you go beyond that. You don't just give customers access to their products and services. You actually help the banks onboard the customers as well.
Well, that's something we are working on. We don't have that kind of feature at the moment, but we are having these conversations with the banks and fintechs to understand how we could add value to the filtering step of the process before the clients go to the due diligence and compliance. So how can they minimize the costs of onboarding the client? Because today, they pay, you know, for the whole funnel, but they end up accepting maybe 10 to 15% of all clients that they do due diligence on, and you know, it's very expensive, and we try to find a solution where we can provide that additional value for filtering the clients that they actually want to work with. So yeah, but it's a work in progress.
Where is most of your volume coming from? Is it from people looking to find a bank in, say, the Baltics, or from a company looking to set up a financial presence in the EU?
Well, the bulk of our users are coming from Latin America, because we have done advertising there. But they are, you know, from the economical point of view, it's a place where more people are looking for solutions where they could have their, you know, bank account or fintech account abroad, and use those different currencies. And another region is Southeast Asia, that have had the best traction, I would say, but also Belarus and Russia and these regions. We haven't targeted Europe that much, because if you're an European and you want to open an account, then it's pretty kind of easy to go to your local bank and open the account there, right? So We have targeted these different regions because it is actually possible for people from these regions to open accounts in Europe, but they just don't know it. And the banks and fintechs in Europe, well, they have license in Europe, they can't advertise in different regions, right? So we are kind of targeting outside of Europe. But of course, the other side of that is corporations that are, you know, in any sort of high risk industry, like crypto exchanges. And the data shows that most of our users are natural persons who are outside of Europe, but most of the paying clients are corporations in Europe. So corporations in high risk industries.
Interesting. So you're basically helping both individuals and corporations outside of the EU borders be able to access the EU financial system. How are you handling the issue of, you know, screening for AML and for FATF and all these other things as well? I see on your list here that you have countries like the US Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico on blacklist countries. How do you address that problem?
Well, we don't really address that problem ourselves, meaning the countries that we have listed as excluded countries on our website, we've done it on a basis that it's very hard for us to find a solution for them. So it kind of doesn't make sense to onboard a client, take their money, and then disappoint them. So we're doing that. That's the reason we aren't working with certain countries, or we at least it's something that we try to avoid. But at the moment we don't do any kind of AML screening ourselves. This is still done by the banks and fintechs. And they have to do their due diligence. Well, they would do their due diligence anyway. It's unlikely that they would trust a third party to do that for them, unless it's a specific, you know, AML or KYC solution provider. So we do only the filtering to match the profiles with suitable banks, but the banks and fintechs, they still do their own compliance. So we are not addressing at the moment the AML issue at all.
What sort of information or data points do you look at to match a customer to a specific financial institution?
Yeah. I would say that for natural persons, it's mainly where they're from and the purpose of the account. So what they want, what is the reason they want to use it for. And for corporations, it's the field of activity and the country of registration. These are the main inputs that at the moment we collect and that we use as an input for the matching engine. It will get more sophisticated in the future, but at the moment, that's what we're using.
And then one last question here. In terms of your model, I'm assuming that you're taking a cut from both customers and the bank, right?
Well, currently we are taking the fee from the end user. If someone or the end user comes to the platform and they want to use the matching engine, they pay a small fee for us. And the fees are really small. They're like, you know, under 10 USD for natural persons and more for the corporation, depending on the field of activity. But we do have affiliate agreements with fintechs. Banks don't really have affiliate agreements. Some of them, you know, have some introducer fees, etc. But it's actually quite surprising how inefficient the affiliate programs most of the fintechs have. Like, it's just non-existent. So that's one of the problems we are trying to solve as well. How to make that more efficient, because we want to make the platform free for natural persons, so they don't have to pay anything, and to build some additional features for corporations, so they get more value out of what we're doing. Meaning we have some features on the roadmap, like building their banking profile, etc., for corporations, so they end up paying more, but they also get more value out of that. So but at the moment, it's mainly the fees that we get from the end users.
So how has it been working with the banks there? You mentioned some of the relationship or fees that they might have. Are they generally eager to work with you? Is that a straightforward process?
No, no. It's not the straightforward process, is it? At all. No. We are more focused on fintechs. You know, we have done so many calls, so many interviews with banks and fintechs in the last, let's say, 8 months. And well, banks are very bureaucratic. They're so regulated. They don't want to give information. They aren't really interested in giving information. And because our current website says that, you know, we work with non-residents, we work high-risk industries, et cetera. So that's a big no-no for them as well. It's like, you know, thank you, but we don't need more trouble. So it's been pretty complicated with the banks. It hasn't been straightforward at all. Fintechs are far more approachable, but then again, the bigger the fintech, the more known the fintech, the less interested they are replying to you and giving you the information that you need in order to have correct information within the system and match profiles as correctly as possible. So banks haven't been very, very approachable, I would say. But we are kind of making some progress.
Yeah, I mean, you did just start this year, so it sounds like you're doing pretty well already. You've got a lot of tech development started. What are the next steps in terms of developing the product?
Yeah, well, it's just a quick disclaimer that it's always changing because we are having those conversations with the banks and fintechs to understand what is actually acceptable for them. But well, one of the features that is going live very soon is the banking profile feature. So essentially, you can build your banking profile. You can already upload all the documents. It's for corporations, and then you can from our system you can send it out to the banks. And you don't, because the way it goes, as a corporation, you want to open a bank account. Then there's a lot of back and forth, you know, please send us this document, please, you know, we have these additional questions, etc. And sometimes it's like three months process to get the account opened or to get somewhere because of the back and forth and so forth and so on. So we are building that banking profile feature and we're talking to the fintechs, etc. Are they kind of willing to use that banking profile as an initial input to give a reply for the client that yes, we do accept you, or like not the commitment that yes, we accept you, but the please proceed to apply because it's kind of seems fine, because the alternative is to fill in those applications in let's say 10 banks and then hope that maybe someone accepts you but filling in application and submitting documents each time, it's very time consuming. And this is something that we want to fix, at least to a certain extent, if at all possible. That's one of the features that's on the horizon. But we're also thinking how to provide more value for the banks. And one of the ideas that we have had is, would it be possible to have some sort of waste management system, in a sense that banks have a lot of people and corporations they reject. So maybe they could redirect these rejected clients to our platform, and in progress, we can share the fees that we get from the clients with the banks. So they could get back some of the costs that they have made to do the due diligence on the client. So that's something we are kind of working on and trying to understand how to make it happen, because I do think there's a big opportunity in helping to gain back some of the costs for the banks. Because what we have seen, at least here in Europe, is in the last decade, the banking fees, etc., they were going down, and now they are going back up again. And of course, all the costs are transferred to the end user. So again, you have to pay for account opening fee, and there are other fees that are going up again, just because the AML regulations are so strict that they have so high costs. So maybe we can do something on that end. And that's really, really interesting.
Yeah, that's a great idea. You know, they've been rejected anyway, so why not help them out? And looks like you're solving a real pain point, which is a great sign you're onto a needed and useful product.
Yeah. But it's a long way to go, in the sense that, you know, we talk about any services or any products that could be sold to the banks is enterprise sales. And then we talk 6 months to 2 years sales cycles, etc. And, you know, it's internally, we haven't kind of decided that is this what we want to do or how to approach that, and how to, you know, how to even get to the people within the banks that are willing to talk to you. So there are many, many, many kind of challenges, but I do think, yeah, that there's a huge opportunity.
Well, you're a bit of a serial entrepreneur. You've worked in a lot of different companies, so it sounds like you have more ideas than you can even get to. What are the things, some of the things or opportunities you're seeing with the world as it's changing right now?
I have had one thought, which I don't. It's not like a new idea, but about the current fintech scene and how things are done, because we have some, let's say, market leaders like TransferWise, Revolut, N26, and well, N26 has a banking license, but anyway, these challenger banks or neobanks, and I have thought about that in current times with all this money printing. Imagine if at one point the currency loses its value, right? And everybody are transacting with stable coins and cryptocurrency. Will these companies lose their position? And then we have companies that are, you know, that have crypto wallets and providing crypto payments, etc. Will they be the ones who are winning instead? So I've had, you know, thoughts around that. Like, will the landscape change if the political or the monetary policy, etc., fails? So that has been one of the ideas. But opportunities in fintech scene, I think there are many, and I guess there are many in serving territories that are, you know, unbanked and where there are a lot of people that would need different banking services and facilities. But I don't have any specific idea to offer like that. So yeah.
Well, we've seen the opportunity with we just mentioned at the top of the podcast that 300 million just to expand in Brazil and serve those underserved customers. So yeah, I think you're right that the market's definitely there. So how are your other companies going these days? Have they been positively, and a few have been positively or negatively affected during the age of COVID?
To a certain extent. Well, we have... In the consultancy business, we have legal services that have been affected, but we also have accounting that hasn't been affected. And our company is one of the official service providers on the Estonian e-residency marketplace, and e-residency is the digital identity to open and manage your online company. So, that kind of niche or market that's growing all the time because people, many people don't have another option now, but then again, it's something that many people want to do anyway to start their companies and live that you know, digital nomad lifestyle, or however you call it. So that's a growing industry. So that part hasn't been affected, but we have also been pretty conservative with the money in the last few years, so we don't have, you know, problems if things aren't that good for some period of time.
That's good to hear. Well, what company would you like to see BankApply partner with someday? What are some of the tech or fintech companies that you'd like to work with?
I would say that it would be really beneficial if we could get all of, because our kind of goal isn't only around Europe. We do approach fintechs in Asia, fintechs in the US, etc. But if we could get the household names to our platform, and if we could work out that waste management platform, then the traffic that we could get from big fintechs and big banks, that would be extraordinary for sure.
That's a good question. I'm also wondering whether maybe partner with some sort of aggregator, like, you know, in the US we have Yodlee and Plaid, and having a customer's detailed financial records, if it's anonymized, could be used to kind of fine tune your model as well, so that you can actually get to the right place.
Yeah, we don't partner with anyone at the moment because we haven't found exactly, you know, what is the value proposition that we are providing. We're still working on that, and these kinds of partnerships, I think they're more realistic once we have the exact model that is working, and we can use the additional inputs to make it even better. But that would be great, of course, and we have thought a lot about what will be the future of BankApply, because if we are dependent on fees from the end users, then these are still one-time fees, right? It's not like you open an account and the next month you come back and pay again, and et cetera. So we have thought about different banking products and getting more financial information that could be useful and valuable. Today we don't have these thoughts, at least not yet.
Interesting. Do you see any advantage to being located in the Baltics now? Because you mentioned that most of your customers tend to be either from Latin America or from Southeast Asia, but is there anything that makes the Baltics or Tallinn in particular special for this kind of product?
Well, for this kind of product, I'm not sure. I do think that Tallinn particularly is a great place to do business for any kind of startup. For one, there's so little bureaucracy to start a business and to do business. So it's cheap to get started, and it's not kind of expensive to test out your idea. And also, we have great taxation system. You know, there are no corporate taxes. So if you make 100,000 euros per year and you don't you do not distribute it to the shareholders, it's not taxed. So you can reinvest all the profit that you make. And this is already a big advantage when you are trying to grow your company. But yeah, I don't think there are any particular advantages for fintech products. Though, for example, TransferWise, founded by Estonians, Moniz, another big fintech in the UK, founded by Estonians. Now nice. There is now there's Ask Robin in South America, which has like a couple of million users, that is doing similar thing as Bankapply, but with credit, and also founded by Estonians. So there are kind of many Estonian founders in the fintech scene, and also Veriff, which is a unicorn startup founded by Estonians in the AML sector. So yeah, there are quite a few companies that are founded by Estonians, and because of that, well, that is actually an advantage. Is investors are pretty keen on investing startups here due to the fact that there are so many success stories. And yeah, when you look at the politics, then like when you look at unicorn startups, then Estonia has four, and then there's only one more, which is in Lithuania. And you know, Italy, for example, has only two unicorns. So Estonia does have something special, but it can also be because the domestic market is so small. Everything is built for international markets, and if you're building for international markets, it has to be competitive. So that would be it.
You're the advantage, Mick. That's the
he's a chicken sauce.
You're there. And a very tech friendly culture, it sounds like.
It's funny that I think of Estonia, and I think of, you know, having voting via the web, having a very digital government as well, and sort of even having, I think I have a good friend who's from Georgia, and maybe 5 or 6 years ago, so there's some sort of cyber attack on Georgian infrastructure, and it was basically a team of Estonian hackers who were sent to Georgia, to Tbilisi, to basically fend off the Russians, right? So it's just this cultural of hacking and of being a very digital first economy. I can see how that could become an advantage for both your company and many others from the country.
Yeah, I think a similar effect like you have in Silicon Valley in sense of because the founding engineers of Skype were Estonians, right? And Skype was an early success story. So this guy made an exit, made a lot of money, and they started investing in local startups. And you know, people here saw that, okay, this is possible, and that that became a place where, you know, a lot of people just want to be an entrepreneurs. So and it has an effect. You know, everything's happening. Companies are here, investors are coming here, so the talent is coming here. So that's how it works out. But the government itself, yeah, it's some people made pretty good decisions early 2000s, I would say, to build digital infrastructure, because most of the things were already built early 2000s, like 2004, we had 3-4, something like that. We had the whole school system digitized. So, and then the public transport, tax returns, it takes only a few minutes and a few clicks to make your tax returns. And yeah, everything kind of went that way. And Estonia became the role model for many other countries.
So clear decision making, focusing on the future, focusing on what's good for the country. Must be nice.
Must be so nice. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I would say that the most important thing was timing. Because at the beginning of the 90s, when the Russian tanks left, Estonia became independent. Then there were years of chaos, privatization era, a lot of fighting, and everything was up for grabs. And eventually, when it was time to build up the country and make everything look like it should look like in a normal state, It was already, you know, the .com era, and of course, then we had some people with foresight to build everything digitally, because we do have Latvia and Lithuania on the side who kind of went through the same thing, but they went in a different direction, and yeah, that gave Estonia an advantage, great public image, and a lot of kind of great marketing possibilities of a country, and you know, make look everything better than it really is, kind of, because we have had, for example, because we work with a lot of foreign entrepreneurs, and we had Japanese tourists coming to Estonia, and they heard that everything was, it's a magical country, everything is digitalized, and then they arrived here and said, what the hell, it's all the same, like, you know, it's just a country. So but yeah, it's fine. It's as an Estonian, I would say that 99% of Estonians, they don't really understand that we have some advantages or some things are easier than they are in other countries. I only know it because I work with foreign entrepreneurs, and when I get clients from Greece or Spain or Italy and they tell me how difficult it is to start a company there, or Finnish clients that come here and say how bad is the taxation, then you kind of realize, okay, we have it pretty good.
That's right. You see that with the contrast with other countries. I know in Japan, I've worked with people who try to get investments, and you know, people are, it's just such a risk-averse culture, and very not the type of attitude towards new companies and startups and things. Very, very skeptical. I heard a story from one guy who tried to raise money in Tokyo, and the guy's like, "I'll give you exactly what you need to build the product. I'm not giving you any more. I'm not paying for your lunches and dinners also."
Yeah.
So a very different attitude than, well, Silicon Valley, I know, where they try to give you enough. You know, they try to give you more money so that to make sure that you have room for some mistakes and some issues. And it sounds like Estonia is a little bit closer to that than Japan, it sounds like.
Yeah, I would say so. And also because it's a small country and, you know, the talent is scarce, then the startups, they do have to fight to get the talent and do have to provide the perks, etc. So yeah, it's you need more than just enough to build a product.
Right. Some free lunches too helps.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. That's Mikk Moll, founder of Bankapply, joining us all the way from Estonia. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news, and thank you for listening.